Hi everyone, welcome to JTalk Extra Time. John Steele here. Before the main show gets underway this week, just a quick programming note. Because the promotion race at the top of J3 is off the chain at the moment, it's crazy, we decided that we'll actually start the pod with the JTalk Short Corner segment. So you're going to hear Magic Mike Ennis up first with all of the J3 news from the weekend. And then after a quick break, you'll get to hear me talking to Johnny Nicol about the bottom of J2 and the relegation scrap. We'll also have a quick comment on Kyoto and Iwata as they're now the two confirmed teams going up to J1 for next year. But yeah, so a slight switch in the order, if you like, with J3 news first, followed by J2. But I hope it's not too confusing, and it makes a nice change. And it also makes our explanation of the promotion and relegation picture a little bit easier to follow. But yeah, that's all from me for now. So here comes Mike with the J3 news in Short Corner. Enjoy the show. Speak to you soon. Hello everyone, and welcome to JTalk Short Corner, the mini-pod that keeps you up to date with events in J3 of the J-League. I'm your host, Mike Innes, and in this episode I'll be looking back on the Sunday games in Round 29 and previewing fixtures coming up in Round 30 of the J3 season. Nowhere else to go but straight into the action this week for the penultimate round of the 2021 season, when all seven fixtures were played on Sunday the 28th of November. As previewed in last week's pod, the J-League schedule compilers couldn't have set up a more nail-biting round, as leaders Roasso Kumamoto were at second place Tegevajaro Miyazaki, and third also met fourth in the shape of Iwate Gurugia Morioka against Katare Toyama. There was a substantial away following at the Unilever Stadium, home of Tegevajaro, to see if Roasso could confirm their promotion back to J2. A draw would be enough for Takeshi Oki's side, and in a scrappy encounter, they had the better of the first half chances, Wataru Iwashita having a good opportunity as early as the fourth minute, but his shot was deflected across goal and cleared. Miyazaki were reduced to long-range efforts, and Yuya Sato in the visitors' net was rarely troubled. With Kumamoto launching the long ball to put the home side under pressure quickly, Toshiki Takahashi went close twice early in the second half, forcing Shunsuke Ueda to scramble across his goal to turn a volley around the post, and then bursting past the defender for a one-on-one, only to prod the ball just wide. Tegevajaro's attacking players were failing to make much of an impact, and Roasso kept on the front foot, hitting the outside of the post via captain Sou Kawahara midway through the second period, going for the win even though the draw would be enough. With the clock ticking into the 84th minute, though, it was Miyazaki who made the breakthrough as substitute Makoto Mimura lofted the ball in from the left, Ryosuke Maeda managed to get in a volley, and Kenji Dai nicked him to strike a close-range shot that hit defender Kohei Kurogi and went over the line. Kumamoto pressed forward in search of the equaliser, and in injury time, rookie Iwashita twice headed just off target in front of the Roasso fans and with the goal at his mercy. But the home defence clung on and the match ended Miyazaki 1, Kumamoto 0, as Tegevajaro concluded their debut J-League season in the most dramatic of circumstances with a home win that takes them top of the table. Meanwhile, at Iwate, visitors Toyama almost took the lead in the 16th minute. Nobuyuki Shina and Mateus Leiria combining on the right to open up the defence and set up Yoji Sasaki, whose goalbound shot was blocked by Toi Kagami. Soon afterwards, Iwate had two chances to break the deadlock, Yuki Shikama hitting the woodwork with a near post header and Taisuke Nakamura's follow-up shot being tipped over the bar by an alert Yohei Nishibe. The game swung on a pair of key refereeing decisions towards the end of the first half that were both to the detriment of Toyama, as forward Shunta Takahashi had a goal ruled out for offside, and then central midfielder Hiroya Sueki received a second yellow card for a foul on Shikama. A must-win match for Qatari, but one in which they would need to play the entire second period a man down. It wasn't until the closing stages that Iwate started to make the extra player count. Substitutes Morelato and Megumu Nishida both involved in the move, that is to say, the goalmouth scramble that led to a loose ball reaching overlapping right-back Masahito Onoda, who stepped around Yuya Himeno and fired past Nishibe. Cue wild celebrations at the Iwagin Stadium, which had barely died down when Morelato had a shot tipped onto the post. It ended Iwate 1, Toyama 0, as Yutaka Akita's side closed out the victory. So, where does all that leave us? To confirm, Tegabajano are top of the table. Not that they know where in the standings they'll finish. A point behind the leaders, Iwate move into second, while Kumamoto drop out of the promotion places into third, and Toyama will stay in J3 for another year. I'll cover all the permutations for the round 30 games later in this episode. But first, to round up the other matches played on Sunday. At Mitsuzawa, Fukushima United beat YSCC Yokohama 2-0 to go fifth in the table, a point behind Toyama. There were full J-League debuts for two young forwards, YSCC's Onye Ogochukwu and Shoki Nagano of Fukushima, for whom Yu Tokisaki also gave a first start of the season to Akira Fantini in goal. Ogochukwu twice in the opening half hour forced saves out of Fantini, but it was Fukushima who went ahead 15 minutes before the break when the 19-year-old Nagano found space at the far post to side-foot home a Tokachi corner. Fantini clawed away a header by Kei Munechika as the closest YSCC came to an equaliser, and with 4 minutes left, Fukushima sealed the win. A brilliant run and cross by Kosuke Tanaka, headed in by Hiroki Higuchi for his 9th of the season. Only a second win in 9 for Fukushima, 3 straight losses now for YSCC. In the bottom of the table clash between Kamatamari Sanuki and Gainare Tottori, all the action was in the second half. Sanuki taking the lead soon after the restart when Wataru Sasaki's cross was deflected inside the far post by defender Takuya Fujiwara for an own goal, despite the attempts of Kazumasa Takagi to claim it. Moments later, it was almost 2-0. Shunta Nagamura's cross being met by Atsuki Satsukawa's header, which brought a superb point-blank save from Tottori keeper Koshiro Itohara. If Kamatamari thought they were going to give their long-suffering band of supporters a first win in 9 games, they were to be disappointed, as Gainare netted 3 times in the last 15 minutes to steal the points. The equaliser came when Masataka Kani's close-range shot was blocked by homekeeper Takuya Takahashi, only for the ricochet to fall kindly for Yuya Taguchi, who scored with ease. Taguchi put his side ahead soon afterwards, receiving Hiroto Sese's through ball and firing home unchallenged from 20 yards, while it was Kani who rounded off the scoring with a low shot from inside the D after Kamatamari had, as on so many occasions this season, failed to clear their lines. Final score, Sanuki 1, Tottori 3. The home side now certain to finish bottom of the table. Tottori's win marking the extension of coach Kim Jong-song's contract for next season. Leo Mineiro was the hero at FC Imabari for their home game with Vanrari Hachinohe, as the Brazilian forward scored within 3 minutes of coming on as a substitute, his first appearance since being injured at Azul Claro Numazu in round 2. The goal, which made it 3-0 to Imabari, came in the last minute of normal time, converted on the rebound with a header after Hachinohe keeper Hayate Tsuta had saved a shot by Takatora Kondo. An emotional Leo Mineiro celebrated with his teammates behind the goal, waving a banner of himself provided by a supporter. It was a comfortable afternoon for Ima Barry, although they hadn't taken the lead until the 56th minute when the impressive Kondo looped a spectacular volley over Tsuta and under the bar from a cross by Takuro Uehara. Right back Wataru Harada netted his second in three games to make it 2-0 on 68 minutes, ending a counter-attack through the heart of the Vanarale defence by playing a 1-2 with Taisei Takase and finishing from 15 yards. Final score, Ima Barry 3, Hachinohe 0. The home side putting down a marker for next season with the way they've been playing in recent weeks. Vanarale's poor away form continuing. They've picked up only 7 points on their travels all year. In the mid-table battle at Kagoshima United, visitors AC Nagano Parseiro came away with a 2-0 win thanks to goals from Naoki Sander and Tsubasa Sano. Sander's opener came just before half-time, a low strike from near the penalty spot that squirmed under keeper Fuma Shirasaka. The second from Sano was on the hour when he ran onto a misjudged back pass by Keisuke Tanabe and slotted past the exposed Shirasaka. Sander hit the post in injury time, and a no-frills win means Nagano are unbeaten in the four games since Hideo Yoshizawa took over. They're 9th, Kagoshima 7th. Finally, FC Gifu against Fujieda My FC finished goalless at Naganagawa, the whole ground watching in disbelief as Shota Kawanishi's close-range effort trickled just wide of the far post with 20 minutes to go. Both teams had chances to win it, but goalkeepers Kazushige Kirihata and Takuya Sugimoto ended up on top. Gifu sit 6th, Fujieda 10th. The team with a bye in round 29 were Numazu. So now to run through the top and bottom of the current league standings. As described, Miyazaki returned to the top with 53 points from 28 games, and their incredible first season in J3 is over, on the pitch at least. In second are Iwate with 52 points from 27 games. Then it's Kumamoto with 51 from 27 and Toyama 45 from 27. At the other end of the table, the current bottom four have all played 27 games. Falling to 12th with 29 points are Hachinohe. Numazu and Tottori both have 26. Sanuki 20. Just to take a quick look ahead to the matches coming up in round 30, the final round of the 2021 season, when all 7 fixtures will be played on Sunday the 5th of December. With Miyazaki having completed all their games, the eyes of J3 watchers will be on Iwate and Kumamoto as the two teams able to be promoted. Let's look at the possible outcomes. Iwate go to Numazu, and if they win, they'll be promoted as J3 champions. If they draw, they'll be promoted. If they lose, they can still be promoted if Kumamoto also lose. Kumamoto themselves are at home to Gifu. If they win, they'll be promoted. If they draw, they'll be promoted if Iwate lose. If Kumamoto lose, they'll remain in J3 for 2022. From the perspective of a Miyazaki supporter or the listener interested in the J2 relegation battle, Tegevajaro will drop out of the top two only if Iwate win or draw and Kumamoto win. Elsewhere, Toyama need a victory at home to Kagoshima to guarantee a fourth place finish. If they slip up, Fukushima can take their place. They're at home to Wooden Spooner's Sanuki. Nagano are at home to another team finishing the year in good form, Ima Barry. Fujieda play host to YSCC, and Tottori end their season at home to Hachinohe. The team with a bye this week are, of course, Miyazaki. That's it for this week's mini-pod, so I'll hand you back to John and Johnny to talk through all the J2 action in J-Talk Extra Time. Bye for now. J-Talk Extra Time.
Thanks a lot, Mike. John Steele here again, and I'm joined by Johnny Nicol to help me to try and make some sense of the situation at the bottom of J2. Johnny, how are you doing?
Yeah, I'm doing pretty good, John. We're getting close to the end of the season, but it still seems quite murky at the bottom. So let's do our best to try and kind of clear things up.
Yeah, we'll try. I think round 41 answered a few questions and ended up posing a whole lot more, which we'll get to later. But it was a pretty sort of topsy-turvy weekend, wasn't it? Johnny, two teams finally confirmed to be relegated, with a third team almost certain to go down. And then there's an almighty battle royale in prospect for that last place in the J2 relegation zone. Without further ado, we should talk about Matsumoto Yamaga. I think they were finally relegated after they drew their big six-pointer 1-1 away at Sagamihara, who still have a decent chance of saving themselves. Not too much to get excited about during the first 89 minutes of this game. Johnny, Lukau, back in the Matsumoto team, went close twice with an overhead kick early on, and then a curler that Sagamihara's goalie Motoaki Miura was able to tip over the bar. But then there was a big goal for Sagamihara right at the end of regulation time as they went ahead. Yes, Tsubasa Ando's free kick was powerfully headed down by their big centre-back Daiki Ume, and the ball then dropped kindly for Shunto Kodama to score from close range. So it seemed like Sagamihara were going to pick up a priceless win. Ume was perhaps less impressive in the 96th minute, though, when Matsumoto equalised. He directed Serginho's free kick into his own net at the near post to make it 1-1. But there was still time for Sagamihara to nearly win it at the other end in what I've written in my notes is added time. Kodama should have scored again, but somehow shot weakly at Kentaro Kakoi in the Matsumoto goal from 6 yards. I've also added a WTF in my notes here, Johnny. That really should have been 2-1, shouldn't it? But yes, it finished 1-1. Matsumoto are bottom, and they can't finish higher than 20th, so they're definitely going down. Sagamihara are kind of just inside the relegation zone in 19th, 1 point adrift of safety. But something we're going to talk about a lot more later is the whoever finishes inside the top two in J3, you know, it could mean that 19th place in J2 also equals safety. Before I come to you for a comment, Johnny, Ehime will be joining Matsumoto in J3 for 2022. They actually took the lead away at Mito at the weekend, but eventually lost 2-1. It looked like a great escape might be on for Ehime in the 17th minute when Kenta Uchida put them in front with a very well-taken free kick from about 25 yards. So Ehime were 1-0 up at half-time. But Mito came on strong at the start of the second half. Ehime's keeper, Masahiro Okamoto, obviously had a rough day at the office in round 40, as we described. He was a lot better this week. He had to make good saves from Masato Nakayama and Ryo Nizato early on. But the equaliser started to look inevitable, and it came in the 50th minute. Kai Matsuzaki played in Koshi Osaki on the left side of Ehime's penalty area, and he slammed a left-footed thunderbolt in off the underside of the bar for 1-1. Mito then grabbed a late winner with a trademark late counter-attack in the 87th minute. Ryotaro Ito carried the ball to the edge of the Ehime box and then sent a low shot into the far corner for the winner. So yes, a Mito 2, Ehime 1 was the final score. Yes, and Ehime, like Matsumoto, they can't finish higher than 20th, so they are down for sure. So Johnny, after months of speculation and, if we're honest, chaos, Matsumoto and Ehime are finally relegated. I think one of these teams is perhaps a bit more surprising than the other, but what did you make of these games and the relegations for Matsumoto and Ehime?
Well, I managed to watch the Sagamihara-Matsumoto game in full, but I think with Sagamihara games recently, you'd be as well just tuning in like the last 50 minutes. That seems to be when all the drama is, when Shunto Kodama comes on. I think this like early on, it wasn't a great quality game, was it? There was, I think, a lot of nerves out there. You know the average positions they show in DAZN at halftime? You know, I watch a lot of J1 and J2 football, and usually, like most teams, you can discern some sort of shape. But I think Sagamihara, there was a few clusters and a few big gaps. And I think Matsumoto had like three players basically on top of each other in the middle of the park. So neither side particularly well set up. I mean, if it was a draw or a loss, Matsumoto were going down anyway. I think that you mentioned that late miss from Kodama. Because we were saying in the green room, like the ball, when it came across, you just thought, it's a goal, Sega Mihara 2-1 up, but somehow he's managed to not put it wide of the goalkeeper. I put it down more of a miss than a good save. But yeah, I mean, because I think the few times I've been on earlier this year, like we've talked, I've said that Sega Mihara, I think, will go down, whereas you've said they might kind of escape. And I think, yeah, Takuya Takagi has done very well. He's worked the loan market very well. So yeah, they're still fighting. But yeah, Matsumoto, I mean, I don't hold out much hope of this actually happening, but they should really be a case study of how not to build a squad. Like I think myself and Mike both said earlier in the year, just bringing in 20 players from J1, J2, J3, college football, high school with like different formations, different skill sets. Like I said to you in the green room, probably the most damning comment I could make about them is if you look down that squad, all the players like Toyama, Shimokawa, Lukao, these kind of players, they could all get decent mid-table, like J2 sides or upper mid-table even next year and do quite well in a better environment. But just, yeah, Matsumoto is just a bit of a mess. And then obviously Ehime, they will join them in J3 next year. I think that was a beautiful free kick, wasn't it, from Uchida? But, I mean, they probably scored a bit too early because it looked like Mito came out firing at the start of the second half, and then obviously Ehime had to go to the win, and Mito are great in the counter-attack, picking teams off with the kind of pace they've got. I think before I come back to the kind of relegation, I wanted to talk a little bit about Mito, because I think you got asked a question a few weeks ago about the teams most likely to be kind of picked off and lose a lot of players. To go the opposite way from that, I think Mito and Verdy, who are usually two teams that lose a lot of players, won't lose as many players this year as they usually do. Maybe I think Mito, they have like Shota Fujio on loan from Cerezo. He'll probably go back. And I think Yoshitake Suzuki's on loan from Tokyo. He might go back there or somewhere higher. And you mentioned Kai Matsuzaki. I think he could go on to bigger things. But other than that, I think it should be all right. You said as well the previous week about Akiba staying on, so that basically guarantees they'll get good quality loan players from like Kashima, Urawa, etc. But yeah, I mean, Ehime and Matsumoto, what I wanted to ask you, John, like almost with like Sendai coming down from J1, I could see them comfortably finishing 12th or something next year in J2. Matsumoto and Ehime, I know it's difficult to see now because we don't know what's going to happen in the offseason. Are these the kind of teams you wouldn't be surprised to struggle like for at least a season in J3? How do you think they'll get on next year at this stage?
It's a really good question. I think Ehime are one of the teams which, if I look for a parallel in J3 right now, they sort of have the kind of a bit of the Gifu kind of vibe about them, don't they? Of a team where they're always kind of around the bottom five, bottom six in J2, and you always got the sense that one season their luck might run out. And for Ehime, it's happened this season. You know, for Gifu, it was the season or two ago. And yeah, I think J3 is a very different place now than it was, you know, 5 or 6 years ago. I don't think Ehime have ever played in J3, right?
Yeah, I don't think it was around when they get promoted.
So that they're going into uncharted territory, and it's difficult to predict what might happen. But I think they'll find it quite tough because they're joining a lot of similar sized teams when they go down. For Matsumoto, they are at that level. They'll be a giant, and that will mean expectations are very high. But everyone that they play against is going to want to beat them, and they haven't dealt very well playing against teams that want to beat them this year. So we'll wait and see. I think for Matsumoto, the cautionary tale is probably, and I use this advisedly, but a team like Nagano, where their off-the-pitch setup looks J2 ready, but on the pitch, they've sort of gone, Nagano have gone from bad to worse this year, and Matsumoto a similar story. So it really depends. I'm still not sure behind the scenes how much of a rebuilding job is needed at Matsumoto, but just the size and the scale of that club means you'd expect to see them challenging at the top next year. But for Ehime, I mean, again, I'm talking more about J3 than J2 here, but you see teams at the bottom of J3 now like Tottori, Sanuki, that have been in J2 in the past, and they're just having a hard time. J3 is a very competitive league now. And I think Ehime could be in for a bit of a shock next year. And Matsumoto will have just enough resources and talent to probably, you know, be challenging to come straight back. But we've been wrong before, Johnny. It does happen. But yes, Ehime, to me, feel like a J3, a sort of, they feel like a yo-yo team now between J2 and J3. And Matsumoto are, again, on the pitch, a J3 outfit right now, but in other aspects, they're primed to be in J2. And let's not forget, I think they were in J1 two seasons ago.
I think Gamba relegated them 2019, yeah.
So, you know, to see them slumming it in the third tier is going to be... going to be very interesting next season. But yes, I think we can say, you know, I think they only have 34 points from the 41 matches. You can't really argue about being relegated with numbers like that, can you? So, yeah, maybe we'll talk about the 20th place team, Johnny, if that's okay. Kita Kyushu. Now, they're almost certain to finish in the bottom three. I had to do some maths, Johnny, so you correct me if you hear anything dodgy in the next couple of sentences, okay? I think Kita Kyushu need a swing of about 9 goals in their favour to finish 19th instead of 20th, where they sit at the moment. Kita Kyushu lost 2-1 at home to Tochigi in their must-win match on Sunday. Tochigi ahead at half-time thanks to a bullet header from their captain, Yasutaka Yanagi, in the 27th minute. I think that makes him Tochigi's top scorer for the season from centre-back with 7. Tochigi doubled their lead about 10 minutes from the end through Sho Sato. He swept the ball home from just inside the penalty area after some good work from Junki Hata and Hayato Kurosaki in the build-up. Kita Kyushu did pull one back in the 92nd minute when Naoki Tsubaki's cross into the Tochigi box was deflected up in the air and Yasufumi Nishimura got to the loose ball ahead of the Tochigi keeper Obi and was able to poke it into the roof of the net. So yeah, it finished Kita Kyushu 1, Tochigi 2. And as mentioned, Kita Kyushu would need a huge win for themselves away at Yamagata and also a huge defeat for Sagamihara away at Tokyo Verde to stand any chance of finishing 19th instead of 20th. So it's not mathematically impossible, but very, very improbable. Does that sound about right, Johnny?
Yeah, I think because obviously Mike's been on before us, so he should have brought everyone up to date with what the situation is in J3. But essentially, Kita Kyushu need a massive swing and also help from J3 teams to survive. So I'm not going to put my neck on the line because probably stranger things have happened in the J League, but it doesn't look good, does it? I think. But I think every time I've been on this year, it almost feels like I could copy and paste my thoughts in Kita Kyushu. Like, we've identified several times they don't have a real centre forward. They never addressed that in the summer transfer window. Constantly conceding goals from crosses. I think in this case, a corner. And you mentioned that Yanagi, he's the top scorer for Tochigi, a known threat, and they just didn't pick him up. The second goal as well, I thought, was very scrappy. And I think it's number 6 for Kita Kyushu. Okamura puts in a very weak tackle and doesn't really try to get back, which I thought was quite poor. And a game like this, like Tochigi are safe, but they're only 14th. So you're not really going to get a much more winnable game in this situation than that, are you? I almost feel like Kita Kyushu, you know how like about 20 years ago in England, like doing a Leeds became like a sort of like saying in English football. I can almost feel like doing a Kita Kyushu becoming a byword from sort of overachieving in your first season, then getting left for dead the second. A bit like, I think, 20, 25 years ago, Ipswich went up to the Premier League under George Burley and then they qualified for the UEFA Cup and got relegated the next year. I think that's what it kind of reminds me of. I think with Tochigi, because I remember you asked me before about just after the summer transfer window, who I thought was the best summer signing, and obviously I got it completely wrong because I think Okayama's Hideki Ishigi has been head and shoulders better than anyone else. But Tochigi as a team, I think their summer business elevated them more than any other side. I think Obi actually came in before the summer transfer window on one of those like training type loans, and then they've got Kurosaki and Mizubuchi came back after, I think from Jeff and Oita after going back there after being on loan last season, and I think he's been injured the last couple of weeks. But Tepe Yachi does come in from Kyoto and he's done quite good. So yeah, I think they've done a lot of decent work. So I mean, again, for you, John, would you agree with that? And also the Tochigi manager Tasaka, could you see him moving any further on? And also any thoughts you might have on Kita Kyushu?
Oh yeah, I just composed myself after hearing George Burley's name mentioned. I wasn't expecting that. It was a bit of a blast from the past. Yeah, I've got a story about him for another time, I think. But yeah, I agree. I think for Kita Kyushu, we can copy and paste from earlier pods. I mean, just that lack of punch up front and basically needing Daigo Takahashi to score somehow. And if he doesn't score, they don't seem to get anything. I noticed that Zen Cardona was picked up front on his own to start this game, which, you know, he's been out of the team for a while, and whoever they've rotated into that kind of top position up front has not really done it for them. So yeah, if you can't score many goals, you're always going to be in trouble down at the bottom. On Tochigi, I think I often make comments about their big and basic approach to football, and it sounds like I'm disparaging them, but in fact I'm not. I think you can see at the bottom of J2 there are lots of teams with similar resources and similar budgets, and they don't get as good results as Tasek has done with the team at Tochigi. They've obviously had their own issues with it, playing a lot of games at the new Kanseki Stadium this year as well, which I think Sean Carroll's mentioned on the pod, it's a big sort of concrete ball with a running track. It's not as perhaps as conducive to them doing well as the sort of cozier stadium, the Tochigi Green Stadium, where they normally play. Yes, I think he probably has earned the chance to have a crack at a club a little bit higher up the league. What might stand him in good stead in that regard is, I think, Kyoto and, to a lesser extent, Iwata. They're going up, aren't they? But they're not really... they haven't played the most expansive football, that you could find. So perhaps there might be a few teams who are more willing to accept a percentage based approach this winter, and that might mean that his phone is ringing quite a lot during the winter break. But I'm very impressed with the job that he's done. In particular, he asks players to do what they are good at rather than asking them or forcing them into positions that they're not comfortable with or something. And that sounds like a very obvious thing, but in the J League you see a lot of teams playing with like three centre-backs and being asked to sort of play a possession game that they're not really suited to. Yeah. And it leads to a lot of comedy goals being conceded, as you can see sort of week in, week out. So to have a manager who keeps it simple, it's basically 4-4-2, and everyone in the 4-4-2 plays their position very well, is something to be admired. And he probably deserves a bit more praise than he's had from me and others. Others kind of J-League commenters or J-League watchers. Yeah, he's done well, and it'll be interesting to see if he signs on at Tochigi for another year. I don't think there's anything announced yet. Yeah, perhaps we might turn up at Gamba and whip them into shape, Johnny. You never know. Yes. But I tend to agree. I think that there isn't really much chance of Kita Kyushu having their great escape. And they I mentioned this was a must-win game for them, and they didn't win it, so well done to Tochigi, and we'll see Kita Kyushu almost certainly back in J3 for next season. Big winners from the weekend, Johnny, and thank goodness, I'm always worried about James Taylor about 2 p.m. on a Sunday, so thank God for him. Kanazawa won a must-win game. They beat Yamagata 2-1 at home, a result that lifts Kanazawa into 17th place. An absolutely chaotic finish to this one, with all three of the goals coming in the last 11 minutes. Now, Kanazawa took the game to their hosts very, very well in the first half. They nearly went in front when Shintaro Shimada went clear and slammed a shot against the crossbar. Shion Niwa on the goal line just couldn't react quickly enough to get the rebound on target, and Yamagata escaped. Yamagata had their own chances, especially in the second half. Vinicius Araujo almost bundled the ball in at the near post, but Kanazawa's keeper Masaki Goto was able to drop on the ball on the goal line and smother it. After that, Goto saved from Araujo again, and Martinez went close with a curler for the visitors as well. The magic moment, Johnny, came when Kanazawa took the lead in the 79th minute. Goto easily collected a pretty aimless Yamagata corner, and he was looking to launch a quick counter-attack. Of all people, someone who was back defending the corner was Yuji Senuma, The striker had only just on as a sub for Kanazawa. He demanded the ball from Goto. That's the only way to describe it, really. And then charged up the field. I felt like I was watching a basketball match for a minute. Senuma then played in another sub, Ryohei Oishi, down the Kanazawa left. And Oishi delayed a moment and then sent a deliciously inviting cross to the penalty spot, where Senuma had continued his run and then expertly headed past Eisuke Fujishima in the Yamagata goal. Wow, I had to double check. I'd selected the Kanazawa highlights on the zone here. I was like, what's going on? But, you know, we're talking about Kanazawa, Johnny, and it looked like they'd blown it as they let in a soft equaliser in the 86th minute. Kota Yamada put in a low shot from the edge of the penalty area that somehow trundled past Goto and into the corner via the post. The goalkeeper must have been unsighted because this shot was travelling at about 1 mile an hour. I'm not sure how it managed to go in from 18 yards, but it did. But magic was in the air for Kanazawa in this game. In the 93rd minute, they cleared another Yamagata corner with an agricultural hoof up to the halfway line. Suddenly, Senuma and the last Yamagata defender, Takumi Yamada, were converging on the bouncing ball. Senuma got there first. He headed the ball past Yamada and was suddenly cleaned through. He carried the ball to the edge of the box and then curled a confident strike beyond Fujishima's despairing dive and into the net for 2-1. And that's how it finished. Senuma finally making amends for that terrible sitter he missed at Iwata earlier in the season, keeping Kanazawa's survival hopes alive. Kanazawa now a point ahead of Omiya and 2 points clear of the drop zone. We'll talk about how many points each team's got a little bit later. Johnny, this game had an absolutely breathless finish. What did you make of it?
It was hashtag scenes at the end when Senuma got his second goal. But yeah, both goals were great from Kanazawa, weren't they? The first one, I'm sure if Peter Klimovsky was watching it as a neutral, he'd be applauding that kind of football. That's the kind of stuff he aspires his teams to play. And he really did feel when, like you said, that really, really soft goal Kanazawa conceded, like, how are they going to come back from that? But yeah, Senuma just bulldozing through the defence and finishing with aplomb. That we mentioned in the green room that 2022 contract's not going to sign itself, so that's probably him signed, sealed and delivered for next year. I don't know how James is feeling about that, but yeah, they delivered when they had to. But I know it was interesting, like James was on the pod last week, and a few of the points he was making about like a lot of the youngsters that get given a chance last year just disappearing. I've kind of wondered about that. And, you know, like teams like Jubilo and Kyoto, who are the top of the league, like they keep the same 11 basically every week. You expect that from successful teams. But, you know, Kanazawa, if you compare the lineup they had against Yamagata versus the team that played in week one of the season, there's only three changes to that. And one of them is due to injury. I think Yoga Ishii was injured. And then two of the other players both came off the bench in this game. So there's been almost like no change in formation or personnel, because you know Gamba were playing Kawasaki last week, and I was talking to Neil Debnam about it's almost like you could draw a pretty good line graph comparing like quality of team and ease of predicting starting 11 in formation, whereas I think Kanazawa are very much the outlier in that they've just kept the same players in formation even though it's definitely not been working. And obviously, they've got a very tough game away to Kyoto in the final day, which I think we'll talk about in more detail towards the end. But yeah, kind of coming to Yamagata, because I think they're going to be one of the teams that's going to be really interesting to watch in the upcoming transfer window, because obviously Klimovsky came in the early part of the season. He still hasn't had a chance to put his stamp on the team like personnel-wise. And yeah, like we've said many times before, because they're seventh now, all those teams in that kind of like third to tenth are very much sitting ducks, I think, for J1 teams to come in. I know Yamagata are missing. There's a former Gamba player, Hiroki Noda. I think he's done very well at centre-back, and he's been ruled out. And since then, they conceded five against Machida, didn't they, last week? And then this week, they had Chuhei Takizawa was in. I think he's like fourth-choice centre-back. I know, and I feel I have to apologise to Noda, because I think in my first ever blog post about Gamba, I wrote something like, Noda looks like he should be a very good centre-back, but isn't one. But he's very much proven me wrong with his performances this year. So you've got him and Riku Handa, Vinicius Araujo, and then you've got Kota Yamada and Yunosuke Kabayama on loan from Marinos. And I think it's probably a bit too late to get on Big Pod this week, but there was a very interesting tweet put out by, I don't know if you saw it, John Hutchinson, the I think one of the Mariners coaches who's not his contract renewed. And he didn't directly have a go, but it's quite clear I don't think he's very happy with Kevin Muscat. So I wondered, one, if Peter Klimovsky may look to bring him in, a very good coach to help him out for next season. And two, if you think Yamagata are going to be able to get Mariners players easily on loan, maybe the relationship between Klimovsky and Muscat might not be that tight. But yeah, I wondered what you thought, John, about like one, Kanazawa, and two, where you see Yamagata going in the coming months.
Yeah, I think on Kanazawa, I can't really add much, in terms of passion or insight to what James said last week and you've said there. Other than I think just in general, it's very important for professional players to know that their place in the team is under threat if they don't perform. And that is why you tend to find the lineups at successful teams are consistent. It's because those players are consistently performing either in training or on match days or both. Whereas at Kanazawa, I think, and Matsumoto have also suffered from this, I think, this season of players, when they've played poorly, they've not lost their place. And I think that's a very dangerous, even if it's only subconscious or subliminal, the message that sends to players are like, yeah, if you're 6 out of 10 this week, you'll play next week. And if you're 5 out of 10, you'll still play. I think Masaki Yanagishita probably wouldn't say it to his face, because obviously he's quite an abrasive character, as we know. And he might, there's just a chance he knows more about football than me. But yeah, I think that's a bad situation to be in when players are playing poorly and keeping their place. I think it engenders complacency among those players, to be honest, more or less. On Yamagata, yeah, it's an interesting one. I think you said Klimovsky's not had a chance to kind of put his stamp on the team, personnel-wise. But I think, Kabayama coming in and Martinez signing, it does give you an insight into where he wants the team to go. I think Klimovsky's already proven that he knows what he's doing with the front six, so I don't have any worries about that at all. But you mentioned that centre-back, there's been a few issues. And also I noticed Victor, the goalkeeper, has dropped in favour of Fujishima at one point, wasn't he? And I wonder if, I think the jury might be out a little bit on the defensive organisation and, perhaps scouting, actually, with Klimovsky. So whether John Hutchison could come in and help with that, the defensive side of things, is what I'm really interested in. I think even if there's turnover in the front positions at Yamagata during the winter, they will have good forwards and play attractive attacking football next year with Klimovsky in charge. But what will happen at the back, I think, is a more interesting, more interesting situation. Yes, and I wonder if players will come in on loan from Marinos again. Kevin Muscat seems to put a few people's noses out of joint a little bit, if we can put it that way. So I'm not sure if he has tight relationships with anybody. Just on the basis that they're all Australian, it seems a bit simplistic. But yeah, we'll wait and see. But I think defensively, Yamagata might have to do a bit more shopping in that department this winter than up front. I don't know. Anyway, Johnny, talking of teams that might need a long shopping list in the winter, we better talk about Omiya Ardija. They are still in horrible discomfort, really, in 18th, just 1 point ahead of 19th place Sagamihara, as mentioned. Omiya picked up a pretty decent point from their daunting-looking trip to Machida in round 41, but considering the chances they missed, they might feel like they should have had all three. The game finished 0-0, as mentioned. Plenty of excitement in the last quarter of this one. Dudu nearly putting Machida in front with a sort of slow-motion half-overhead kick. I don't really know how to describe this, but it came back off the Omiya crossbar. Atsushi Kawata then nearly caught out the Machida keeper Koki Fukui when he was off his line. Kawata tried his luck from about 45 yards but was off target. And then Dudu was clean through. He looked offside to me, but the flag stayed down, but he blazed the ball over the crossbar. Kanji Okunuki came on as a half-time sub for Omiya and, as he often does, made a big difference. His mazy dribble in the last 10 minutes left him with just the goalkeeper to beat, and he could even have squared the ball to an unmarked Kawata if he wanted to, but he chose to go it alone and shot straight at the goalie, a bit like Shunto Kodama in the Sagamihara game. I've just written "do" in my notes here, Johnny, for that one. There was still time for Okunuki to set up a chance for Kazuaki Mawatari, but he volleyed wide at the near post from close range. And there was one last fright for Machida as Fukui dropped across from an Omiya corner, but they just about organised themselves quickly enough to snuff out the danger around the penalty spot. So yes, Matsuda nil, Omiya nil, and we'll talk about the upcoming fixtures in a moment, Johnny, but Omiya against Gunma is the game to watch in round 42. It's going to be a very stressful afternoon for Squirrels fans. You feel. And before I come to you, Johnny, for a comment, I'll mention another game that finished 0-0. Gunma stay 16th, but only 3 points clear of the relegation zone after drawing 0-0 at home to Iwata, who are now officially champions. Congratulations to them. This was a fourth straight draw for Gunma, who gave a really good account of themselves in the first half of this game. Shota Aoki drew a good save from Ryuki Muna in the Iwata goal, and then So Hirao went fairly close for the home side with a speculative effort from about 25 yards. Lukian, star striker for Iwata, had his arm heavily bandaged or plastered, I'm not sure which, in this game, so perhaps he was carrying an injury. He nearly won it for Iwata in second half stoppage time, but headed over the bar when he perhaps should have got the ball on target. But yeah, it finished 0-0. And as mentioned, goodness gracious me, Johnny, Gunma have to go to Omiya on the final day. In that game, a draw would mean that Gunma are completely safe. Any other result opens up a whole can of permutation worms that I don't really want to get into right now. But what about these two goalless draws? Johnny, Machida nil, Omiya nil, and Gunma nil, Iwata nil. What did you think?
Well, Machida, Omiya looked like one of these games from this match day that the second half was far better than the first half. Like you mentioned, Dudu's chance, Okunuki looked lively, and then Koki Fukui, as he's wont to do, added a few shenanigans to sort of liven proceedings up. I think, yeah, Machida, just because they're fifth in the league, you just feel like if they could hit the jackpot with a striker, they'd be real like promotion contenders. Because I think last year they brought in, was it Masovic and Sepovic, that just didn't work out. This year, Dudu and Chong Tese haven't done a lot, but they've had a lot of like strong contributions from kind of attacking midfielders. I think Aria Jasur Hasegawa, I think he doesn't get a lot of credit in J1 circles, but he's been a pretty astute signing. I think he's contributed a lot. And you were mentioning the Yamagata section about like Marinos Lonies. I mentioned him, I think, in a previous appearance, but Kaina Yoshio, because he's now reached, he's got 10 goals and 10 assists. So I think that's very good form from him from down the wing. And unfortunately for Machida, I don't think they'll be able to keep hold of him. I think he might go back to Marinos or somewhere in J1. But yeah, you just feel if Machida had a really good striker, like, I mean, it seems obvious to say a Peter Yutaka, if Kyoto are going up to J1 and Machida did try and sign him, I imagine that Machida team with Yutaka could be a genuine title challenger. And I mean, with Omiya, I'm aware you'll probably be talking to Mike maybe at the end of the season, and a bit like James, he'll add a much more detailed and kind of passionate analysis than I can do. And I think like last week you were talking about like, are Omiya a bad team or they're just a dozy team? But I sometimes help out with the like transfer market, like valuations on the website. And I think in the summer, like Omiya over the last year, there was an article said like the value of the players has just dropped like more than any other team in the division. So I think there's good individual players there, but overall they're just not a good team. And like you mentioned in the introduction, like big changes are needed next season. And then with Gunma and Jubilo, I think as you mentioned, Gunma seemed to give a pretty good account of themselves. And yeah, both of these teams, Jubilo champions, that they've reached their goal for this year. Gunma, that their goal for this year would just have been survival, and they're tantalisingly close to getting that. It was interesting for me as a Gamba fan, because obviously Kosuke Yamamoto was out suspended for Jubilo, so they had the central midfield pairing of Yasuyuki Kono and Yasuhito Endo, with Kotaro Omori playing just ahead of them. All three of those players have championship medals, or J2 championship medals from Gamba in 2013. But we're now in 2021. I would never have thought the three of them would be winning the title again. So with such a large gap in between title wins. But yeah, I think Gunma have kind of flopped a lot this season. And like they brought on a lot of university players. They just haven't worked out. But then like Shunobu's come in from Jubilo, and they've got Hosagai's in midfield. If they could find a way to get good young players, either on loan or from universities, I think that's the way for them to move up. If it's just relying on solid veterans that they're just going to, they'll be one of these Ehime Gifu teams that are circling the bowl, I think, for the foreseeable future. With Jubilo, this is what I kind of had a question for you about, because obviously we want to kind of bridge the gap between J2 and J1, because they're going up. For me, like, when I look at that Jubilo team, they've obviously been, like, they're 9 points clear, a third deserved promotion, like, winners. But they've got Kentaro Oi, Masaya Matsumoto, Kosuke Yamamoto, Daiki Ogawa, Hiroki Yamada. All of those players, that's the core of their starting members. They were all there. They were all core members during 2018, 2019, when they were pretty horrible in J1. And they've added to that with players from very good level J1 teams, but they're out of favour, like Yuto Suzuki, Endo, Yuki Otsu, Yamamoto and Ito at the back. Lukian's obviously the star turn for them, but I mean, at the moment, I struggle to see them finishing too high up J1 unless there's sort of significant investment. And they have the problem, obviously, that their coach, I think, was still in hospital or he's been released and he's not back on the bench yet. But yeah, I actually have two questions for you, John. One about Jubilo. How, again, at this stage, how do you see them shaping up for a push at J1 and where do they need to strengthen? And two, Omiya, what kind of changes do you think they need to make for next season? I know that's quite some big topics for this time of night.
No, I think it's good. We're here to tackle the big questions, Johnny, so don't worry. I think, well, let me take the Omiya one first, because I think regardless of where they actually end up finishing, and I think for what it's worth, they're going to just about limp over the line probably, aren't they, and survive. They need wholesale changes, I think. And the coach, Shimoda, who's come in, you know, his record is in the sort of, you mentioned, like, loaning in good young players. It's kind of his modus operandi, or it was at Yamaguchi. He was sort of like a mini or proto, Tadahiro Akiba in that sense, with the reputation that he garnered for bringing in young players on loan and developing them. So I wonder if Omiya are going to go down that route for next season. I think that would appeal to the front office, because it would be cheaper than what they've tried to do in the past in terms of assembling a playing squad. But yes, I think a lot of work is needed, because the culture there, I think, on the playing side, it's something that's talked about a lot with Jeff. I agree with people who say that the concept of club culture is basically overblown. I think it's only really very, very successful teams actually have a club culture to speak of. But I think mediocrity has been the watchword for a bit too long at Omiya. And I think if you're asked, like, what is their kind of DNA at the moment, and it's mediocrity, that's a very bad situation to be in, because if your baseline is mediocre and you have a bad season, well, you're in relegation trouble, and that's what's happened this year. So I think wholesale changes are needed, and I'm expecting to see, for better or for worse, probably a Matsumoto style scorched earth policy in the winter. Obviously, it didn't do Matsumoto any good this year, so whether it's a good strategy or not, we'll wait to see, but that's kind of what I'm expecting. On Iwata, they are sort of weird champions, I think. And what I mean by that is I haven't really seen them, I can't remember seeing them sort of fully extended by anybody this year. So I think they've almost played within themselves, more or less. I know that makes it sound like I don't think they're worthy champions. That's not what I'm trying to say. As you mentioned, they've clearly been the best team over the 41 games. Then 9 points clear of third. That's not accidental or random. I think in terms of next season, what they are lacking, apart from one player that you mentioned, which is Daiki Ogawa, that team is frighteningly short of pace, in my opinion. Yeah. And they've kind of got away with it this season because they have the ball for 80% of the time. And Yasuhito Endo is kind of untroubled and can dictate the game from the sort of deep midfield, you know, playmaker position. Lukian has just been imperious this season, but his kind of short bursts of acceleration, I think a lot of J1 defenders are going to be able to cope with that, or certainly a lot better than J2 defenders. And you mentioned Kentaro Oi is not quick. The other centre-backs that you mentioned are not quick. And I think in goal, Ryuki Muta's really impressed me this season, but I think he's quite young. And the other goalkeeper, the experienced pro, Hatta, has not impressed me this year. And the Moldovan goalkeeper, I think, has only played once in the Emperor's Cup and did not do great. So I think they might be looking for someone experienced to come in goal as well. But I think where they're really lacking, and if they're smart, they'll look for quick players who can help them out, especially in the wide positions. Because when I look at the squad right now, the only player who I would... And I'm not an expert on the Iwata squad, I should mention. You will know more than me. Daiki Ogawa is like the only quick player in that team, as far as I can see. So I think they need an injection of pace. And I wouldn't be surprised if they call up someone like Yusuke Matsuo from Yokohama FC and see if he might like another crack at J1. I suspect he might be destined to go somewhere a little bit higher. But yeah, I take your point. I think a lot of the players from this team will have a hard time in J1 next year. I give them a good chance of staying up because I think they'll add a lot of players in the winter. But it's going to be hard going if they don't add some pace to the team, for sure.
Yeah.
Okay. I hope that's good enough, Johnny. I couldn't be too forensic.
Yeah. Well, I think Matsuo would be a great signing for Jubilo, but like you say, I don't think he's going to join them. I know because Shonan are in a bit of relegation trouble. If they come down, the rumor is that Kosei Tani would go to Jubilo on loan, which I think would be a good signing. But yeah, definitely at the back, I think they need a bit more pace. And yeah, I think Endo, whether he ends up back at Jubilo is still up for debate. I think there's it's very early days, but I think you've done quite a good analysis there, John, of what we might expect them or where we might expect them to strengthen, I think, in the winter.
Oh, that's well. In that case, let's leave it there before we say anything silly and ruin it. So, just before we move on, Johnny, a quick check on the bottom of the J2 table. So, the bottom two, Matsumoto and Ehime, they're both down. They'll be in J3. In 2022. Third bottom at the moment, Kita Kyushu, as mentioned, because of the goal difference, they are 99.9% certain to go down as well. Above them, in 19th place, we have Sagamihara with 38 points. Then it's Omiya in 18th on 39, Kanazawa in 17th with 40, and Gunma 16th on 41. So perhaps talk about some of the permutations when we preview the round 42 games at the weekend in a moment, Johnny. Just before we do that, I wanted to get a comment from you on Kyoto. Kyoto Sanga, they finally clinched their J1 return after, I think, 12 seasons in the second tier by drawing 0-0 away at Jeff Chiba on Sunday. Plenty of good saves from Jeff's goalie, Shota Arai, in this one. His best stop was probably when he got a strong hand onto a shot from Peter Utaka in the 73rd minute. Sorry, Kyoto knew going into this game that a point would be good enough to seal promotion, but they did have some scares, not least when a curling strike from Saldana rattled their crossbar. And before full time, Kyoto keeper Keisuke Shimizu did very well to push away a powerful header from Solomon Sakuragawa from a Jeff corner. But it finished 0-0, and that sparked wild celebrations among the travelling players and fans. So, Johnny, is a keen J1 watcher, are you looking forward to seeing Kyoto in J1 next year? And tell us about the kind of altercation that happened just before the final whistle as well.
Well, I'll start with the positive and then maybe end with that altercation. I think a lot of Gamba fans are delighted to have another close away game. I think there's almost like a kind of big brother, little brother relationship between the regular J1 teams in Kyoto. And I think, you know, I started watching J-League in 2013 when Gamba were in J2, and I think Kyoto finished third that year and were unlucky not to go back to J1. But so in my mind, like, I know Yasuhito Endo was there and I know Park Ji-sung was there, but I mean, that might as well have been centuries ago from my kind of time watching the J-League. Kyoto have always been a decent J2 team in my book, but yeah, I'm really happy for them to come back with that stadium. And that's why Cho's been brought in. That's why Jordi Boyce has been brought in. That's why Utaka's been brought in. I think there's no doubt. Yeah, they're 4 points ahead of Kofu, who have also had a very good season. Jubilo and Kyoto, we mentioned it like a couple of times ago that they've just been kind of not quite head and shoulders above the rest, but comfortably the best two teams. And it's good to see them back. This, like, Jeff have been in great form. Going away to Jeff is not an easy place to go when you have to wrap up the title. And just to kind of piggyback on what I think James was saying last week about Daisuke Suzuki, the Jeff defender, because I think he got treated quite roughly in my book at Urawa last season. I think they lost the game 6-2 at Nagoya. They were 5-0 down at halftime. And he was hauled off, and I think at halftime, and he only played one more game after that, which you might say 5-0 down at halftime is a pretty poor performance, but it was a poor team performance. It wasn't just him, and Urawa continued to defend badly the rest of the season with him not in the team, and Rodriguez has just done shipping out Makino and Thomas Deng. So I think, I'm not saying Suzuki should be in the Urawa team this year, but he is definitely a J1 quality defender, and I think along with with Taishi Taguchi and Shota Arai, that's a very solid spine of the team. But yeah, full credit to Kyoto. And I guess, tensions were running high as they're kind of counting down to their promotion. And it looked like Itsuki Oda kind of went through the back, kind of knee in the back, very rough on the Kyoto attacker. Not really out of character for J2, if we might say. A definite yellow card, but Ismaila seemed to say something and words were exchanged, and then it all kicked off, and Ismaila took a long time to calm down. We're not really sure what was said or what really was the spark, but it was nice to see at least Utaka and Daisuke Suzuki chatted it out, had a hug. But yeah, I don't know. I guess Ismaila probably calmed down when the final whistle went and he knew he was going to play in J1 next season. But yeah, do you have anything to add to what I said there, John?
No, if anybody caught the zone highlights of this game, the robust exchange of views wasn't included that we're referencing here. But I think maybe just listening to your kind of recap, it's perhaps just an age thing. You know, Ismaila's 21 and is probably, you know, more likely to get fired up than I think Peter Utaka is 38.
I think he's the same age as me, 37.
37, and he probably just doesn't want to. He realizes that the wasted heartbeats and the wasted energy on arguing about these things is probably not worth it. So yeah, perhaps it's just age, you know, bringing wisdom in that situation. But yeah, it kind of always surprises me. It was the same with Iwata having their kind of championship party on the pitch at an away team's ground. I think perhaps for us coming from the UK point of view, it's perhaps something where you might want to get down the tunnel quite quickly and celebrate in the dressing room, depending on the stadium. So yeah, just another good example of something that's wholesome about the J-League. And yeah, I think a lot of these things are forgotten after, you know, people get worked up, don't they? And hopefully everything's calmed down now and it's no big problem. But yeah, congratulations to Kyoto. I agree with you. They're one of the they're one of the top two teams on merit, and it's fascinating to see how they'll do next year. I think they perhaps need reinforcements up front, because Utaka's going to need a lot of help around him, I think, if he stays for next season. But yeah, we'll wait and see. It's going to be fascinating to see how it pans out. Johnny, at this point, we're going to take a quick recording break so that I can just drop in a review of the four other games from the weekend in J2. So I didn't ask you about all the games because of time constraints, but I'll just drop in a kind of review of the other four dead rubbers, if you like, end of season games. But then we'll get back together after that, and we'll do a preview of the final round of games, round 42, that's coming up on Sunday. So yeah, please stay tuned for that. In a moment, you're going to hear just me. And then Johnny and I will be back after that. Hi everyone, John Steele here. Just to quickly run through the games from J2 round 41 that Johnny and I didn't cover in the main part of the pod this week. Firstly, Vanfrey Kofu won 1-0 on the road at Yamaguchi, thanks to a goal in the 74th minute from Ryotaro Nakamura. Yamaguchi had some decent chances in this game. At the end of the first half, Kofu goalie Kohei Kawata did well to save from Kazuma Takai at close range, and Kofu captain Ryohei Arai did well to clear a follow-up effort off the line as well. Kawata made another good stop from Takai midway through the second half, and 6 minutes after that, Kofu were in front. A dozy giveaway from Wataru Tanaka presented the ball to Nakamura about 25 yards out, and he unleashed an absolute thunderbolt that flew past the startled Kentaro Seki for 1-0, and that's how it finished. Yamaguchi 0, Kofu 1. A quick bit of manager news from Kofu. Akira Ito is officially leaving as Kofu manager this winter. He is hotly rumoured to be taking over at newly promoted Iwata in J1 next year, as it seems their current boss, Masakazu Suzuki, will unfortunately have to step down due to ill health. But I don't think that's 100% confirmed, but it is confirmed that Ito is leaving Kofu. Elsewhere, Nagasaki lost at home for the first time in quite some time, 1-0 against Fagiano Okayama. Okayama went close at the end of the first half in this one, but Nagasaki keeper Masaya Tomizawa did well to keep out a powerful shot from Ryosuke Kawano. It was just a temporary reprieve though. Nagasaki played themselves into trouble right at the start of the second half when Masaru Kato took a heavy touch and gave away possession inside his own half. Eventually, the ball fell to Hideki Ishige, who swept in from the edge of the box for his sixth goal of the season. And that's how things stayed. Nagasaki 0, Okayama 1. More manager news. Nagasaki have officially confirmed that Hiroshi Matsuda, who's done such a good job since coming in midway through the season, he's going to be in charge at Transcosmos Stadium for 2022 as well. So exciting times ahead for Nagasaki, you have to think. The match between Ryukyu and Niigata at Tapic Hyagon Stadium ended 1-1. Ryukyu took the lead in this one about 10 minutes before half-time when Keigo Numata sent a cushion through ball over the top of the Niigata defence, and Shunsuke Motegi latched onto it and confidently beat the visiting keeper Koto Abe from about 10 yards. But it was 1-1 early on in the second half. A flowing Niigata counter-attack resulted in a low cross from half-time substitute Soya Fujiwara being volleyed in from around about the penalty spot by Koji Suzuki. And the game finished Ryukyu 1, Niigata 1. Even more managerial news, Ryukyu have confirmed they'll continue with their coach, Tetsuhiro Kina, for next season. So again, possibly bright things coming for FC Ryukyu next year. And in terms of player contracts at Niigata, they've announced that they're going to be saying goodbye to both Romero Frank and Yuki Omoto this winter. Neither player is going to have their contracts renewed for next season, so it'll be interesting to see where both of them, particularly Romero Frank, end up. And just finally, Blaublitz Akita ended their home campaign for 2021 with a 4-1 defeat against Tokyo Verdy. Ryoga Sato forced a good save from Akita keeper Yoshiaki Arai, who was starting instead of Yudai Tanaka, in just the 12th minute here. But from the resulting corner, the away side took the lead. Akita just couldn't clear their lines, and when their defenders were slow to react to the loose ball, Ryoga Sato gleefully slammed the ball in off the post for 1-0. I think that's 12 or possibly even 13 goals for Sato in his debut pro season, so a pretty good return from the rookie. Verdy doubled their lead 10 minutes before the break. Mizuki Arai charged down an attempted clearance from Nao Eguchi, carried the ball into the penalty area, and then crossed for Junki Koike to just about tap in. He actually mishit his shot completely, but he was so close to the goal line that it went in. A career-high 17 goals for Koike this season. Incredible stuff from the veteran attacker. Akita pulled the goal back 5 minutes later, though. Eguchi went some way to redeeming himself by scoring directly from a free kick in a very wide position out on the Akita left. I think he meant it, but it's hard to know for sure. Verdy goalie Yuya Nagasawa, who'd actually come on as a sub in this game in the 20th minute after an injury to the first choice goalie Mateus, should probably have done better and kept this one out, but it went in. So 2-1 to Verdy at half time. The game was made safe with an own goal from Akita in the 88th minute. Even more defensive pinball and even slower reaction times, unfortunately, led to centre-back Shigeto Masuda sticking out a leg and inadvertently dinking the ball over the onrushing goalie Arai for 3-1. And there was still time in the 93rd minute for another sub for Verdy, Ryoya Yamashita, to roll in a low shot from just inside the penalty area after some pretty powder puff Akita defending. I have to say, in their defence, they've had a really good season and they just looked a bit tired and not really at it at the back in this game. So the final score was Akita 1, Tokyo Verdy 4. And I think that wraps up all of the round 41 action, so stay tuned in a minute. You'll be back with me and Johnny. We're going to preview the big games coming up on the final day in round 42 in just a moment. Welcome back, everyone. Johnny Nicol is still with me here. Johnny, we're just going to take a couple of minutes to look ahead to the final round of games coming up on Sunday, December the 5th, round 42. And yes, all the games kicking off at 1 p.m. Japan time. So simultaneous kickoffs for all 11 matches. There are four games that we need to focus on I think, Johnny. Third bottom, Kitakyushu go to Yamagata. As mentioned, they need a huge win to stand any chance of finishing 19th. And spoilers, it's probably not going to happen for them, is it? 19th in the table at the moment, Sagamihara go to Tokyo Verdy. 17th place, Kanazawa go to Kyoto. And 18th placed Omiya hosts 16th place Gunma in the blockbuster NAC 5. Now, I'm going to do my best with some of these permutations, Johnny. So hopefully you'll let all this go through on the nod. Kitakyushu, as mentioned, they need to win big and then have Sagamihara lose big in order to stand any chance of finishing 19th. For reference, Kitakyushu's goal difference is minus 27, Sagamihara on minus 19. So the swing of nine goals needed there. Sagamihara will survive for sure if they win or if they draw and Omiya lose by a ridiculous margin. That's because Sagamihara's goal difference is minus 19, Omiya on a relatively respectable minus 7. For Omiya themselves, if they win, they're fine. They'll also be okay if they draw, as long as Kanazawa lose or Sagamihara don't win. All right, I hope you're still there, Johnny.
I'm
good. Yeah, good. Yeah, all sounds good. Kanazawa, if they win, they'll be safe. If they draw, they're safe if Gunma win or draw, or if Gunma lose by more than 3 goals, or if Sagamihara don't win. Okay. Kanazawa will also be okay if they lose themselves, if Omiya lose or Sagamihara don't win. Okay, and we're nearly finished, Johnny. Gunma are safe if they avoid defeat in their game away at Omiya. If Gunma lose, they'll still be okay if Sagamihara fail to win or Kanazawa lose. Now, if any of this is wrong, I nicked it all from the official J-League website. Okay, so please tweet at them and not me, because maths, as we know, is my kryptonite, Johnny. Johnny, I'm not going to ask you for all the permutations yourself, but how do you think it's going to go?
Well, first of all, congratulations on that, because I think I'd got there in the end. I think I caught up at the end and worked out what you were saying. We kind of talked about this in the green room, and it's the J-League, so literally anything can happen. And obviously all of that is connected to what happens in J3. And I think what I will say is, from my time of watching J-League, I just don't see Kitakyushu comfortably losing to Yamagata and both Iwata and Kumamoto like cruising to victory. There's going to be some sort of spanner in the works at some point. I think, well, first of all, Omiya Gunma, because Gunma can draw and Omiya have to win. So in a way, the pressure's on Omiya. They're going to have to attack and then Gunma can pick them off. I don't think either of those teams will go down, but I could see Gunma winning there or at least getting a draw. With Kitakyushu, I could see them getting something. I could probably see them being 2-1 up in the last minute at Yamagata and then conceding a goal. But I think whatever Kitakyushu do, I'm sorry to their fans, I just don't see it being enough. You mentioned the goal difference. They're not going to go and smash Yamagata away, are they? They could win 2-1, but I don't see it being any more than that. Verdy and Sagamihara, again, we said, I mean, that could be 4-1 Verdy or 4-1 Sagamihara. And we also said, I think, that Yuan Matsuhashi, the young kind of impressive young forward, he's on loan from Verdy to Sagamihara, so probably won't play. Whether that allows Shunto Kodama to come in, I don't know why he's been on the bench, because he's got 3 goals in 7 games and things seem to happen when he's there. But yeah, I think I could see Sagamihara getting something from Verdy, and I could also see at least one of the J3 teams, Kumamoto or Morioka, not winning, which means that they would be all right in 19th. And then, yeah, I think that the one we were talking about again the most earlier was Kyoto against Kanazawa. I almost feel like if Kyoto had played Jeff at home last week and they were away to Kanazawa this week, I could see Kanazawa beating Kyoto, because they would have had their big celebration. Like, you know, they've built big, beautiful stadium that's been full once, I think, for a preseason game with Cerezo. It's been built for J1, chose there for J1, Utaka, Boyce, all the big names. You feel like it's going to be rocking as much as J-League sort of restrictions allow it to be. And it's just not an atmosphere Kanazawa are going to want to go into. And I know James, following him on Twitter and on here, always talks about how often Kanazawa concede a goal in the first 15 minutes. So you just think with that atmosphere, if they go a goal down in the first 10 or 15 minutes, it could be a case of how many for Kyoto. I think their only chance to get something from that is if, you know, the longer it goes at 0-0, then Kyoto might start kind of subbing players off to get ovations from the fans and they might be able to nick a goal late on. But yeah, even if they're kind of partying this week, Kyoto, I still think Cho's going to kind of crack the whip. We'll have them ready in front of their home fans. I struggle to see Kanazawa getting anything, but I think in the end shake-up, they might be okay. I think one other game which I wanted to briefly mention, I think the other game that's got anything riding on it is Machida going to Niigata, because if Niigata win, that would move them up to fifth above Machida and Albert Puig's final game. And I know I asked a question on Big Pod last week, and Sean Carroll did some really excellent analysis on Puig and how he's done with Niigata. We talked about them and him previously, and Sean was definitely much more glass half full, whereas we were a bit more glass half empty. And I think it definitely suits my argument, because I feel like Niigata are a top six team and Puig has them in six, so he's basically achieved the bare minimum. And yeah, it's maybe a bit more style over substance FC Tokyo looking at him. So I kind of feel it would suit my argument more if Machida got a draw. But I mean, at the end of the day, it probably doesn't matter too much. But it's going to be, yeah, as Dan Orlowitz says, Chaos Energy J-League at the bottom and at the top of J3. How about you, John? How do you see things working out?
Yeah, I think your sort of wrap up there was really good, and I'd go along with everything you said. Despite the fact that I just spent 2 minutes reading out various mathematical formula, you know, quadratic equations for the bottom of J2, I'm kind of, my gut feeling is, yeah, I think Kitakyushu are not going to do it, are they? They're going to end up finishing third bottom and go down. But just to bring the J3 picture back in, I also have a sneaky feeling, yeah, like you said, one of the teams that needs a result to get into the top two, so Iwate or Kumamoto, might slip up. I can well imagine Miyazaki finishing in the top two in J3. And of course, they're not eligible for promotion. That means the 19th place team in J2 gets to stay up. I think what we'll probably have is a very, very exciting final day. But I think the teams that we have kind of going down right now, Matsumoto and Ehime for sure, Kitakyushu almost certain, I think that will obviously stay. And then, yeah, I think the other teams in trouble are going to kind of battle and scrap for 90 minutes. But I have a feeling Miyazaki seems to be their year somehow. I think they will end up finishing by hook or by crook in the top two in J3. But I've been wrong before. Could be wrong again. And yeah, I think whatever happens, it's going to be an exciting Sunday afternoon. We should mention that the scheduling of these games, Johnny, because all the J2 games are kicking off at 1 p.m, but the J3 games are all at 2, right? So we're going to finish all of the J2 action and then still have the second halves to go in J3. So that adds another, you know, dimension of perhaps we'll have players, you know, biting their nails in dressing rooms or crowded around iPads, you know, up and down the archipelago. So that is a weird J-League scheduling is hard to understand at the best of times, but I'm not sure why we need the games being played, you know, just with 1 hour between between the kickoff times. But yeah, it all adds to the excitement and the chaos energy certainly building, as you said. And yeah, hopefully we can get back together next week maybe and talk about it some more. The other games we'll mention quickly before I let you go, Johnny. Tochigi are taking on Ryukyu in the last game of the season. Kofu host Mito. It's Matsumoto against Nagasaki. Iwata finish off with a home game against Akita. Okayama host Jeff Chiba. That will be Kenji Anima's last game in charge of Okayama, of course. He's moving on. The rumours are that Yoon Jung-hwan's staying on as Jeff Chiba coach for next season. I haven't seen that officially confirmed yet, but I think it looks pretty likely that's going to happen. And last on the slate, and possibly least, Ehime against Yamaguchi. But yeah, I think you're right to call out the Niigata match of the game. That could be an interesting end to the season for both of those two sides. Okay, Johnny, I think that's just about everything. So thank you for all of your input and your analysis. Much appreciated. I promised you we'd finish about 30 minutes earlier than we actually have. So apologies for that. But is there anything else you want to put out there before we wrap up? I know you're at Blog Gamba on Twitter. What can people expect on the blog in the next few days?
Well, I've actually been quite busy today because after work I just put the finishing touches to my final match preview of the season for the game against Shonan, who, if things don't go well for them on Saturday, we might be talking about more in JTET next season. So, yeah, I'm almost ready to put my feet up for the end of the season. But, yeah, it's been great being on here this season, John. I know I was on Big Pod last year. It's a pleasant surprise to be asked to come on here. I've enjoyed it. Hopefully the listeners have enjoyed listening to me. And, yeah, hopefully we can do it again next season. Thank you.
Yeah, no worries. No worries. You're involved in this kind of constant tug of war now between me and Ben, which I'm sure is very flattering and not annoying and stressful at all. So yeah, thanks for putting up with that for the last 8 months or so. Yeah, good. All right. Yeah. Okay, Johnny. Well, we better get our beauty sleep. A big weekend in all three divisions is coming up. So we'll leave it there, I think. But yeah, thanks for coming on, Johnny. It's much appreciated every time. And yeah, thanks to all the listeners. And the downloaders, especially our patrons, we really appreciate your support each and every week. And yeah, it's been a hard season for everybody. So yeah, thank you for sticking by us throughout the ups and the downs. But yeah, we'll be back again next week to take a look at what actually happened in round 42. And then I'll probably try to erase this episode where we made all the wrong predictions. But yeah, enjoy the football coming up this weekend. It's going to be a big one. And we'll speak to you all soon. Yeah, bye for now.